Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Stage Right Podcast. I'm Carlos Estevez, and along with my co-host, Chris McCone, we will talk about life on the road, share advice, stories, perspectives, and help deepen your understanding of everything tour.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Stage Right Podcast, where we talk everything tech. Today, we have the amazing Howie Spangler from the band Ballyhoo, who would never say it, but is an actual tech nerd. So today, we're going to talk about guitars, campers, tour, and everything in between. Welcome, Howie. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for being on. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys asking me, man. It's going to be a fun one. I like, I am a tech nerd, and I definitely, I'm not afraid to say it.
Well, we definitely bonded for the first time over your first Kemper on the last tour we were on together when I was teching for Iration.
That's right.
That's how I actually got to know how he was giving him free Kemper profiles.
Yeah, free Kemper profiles.
So I know that you have like made a few questions for us, Carlos and Chris, which should be fun. Then we have a few for you as well. Do you want to just knock this out and start asking some questions?
Sure. You want me to go first?
I do want you to go first. Yeah.
Okay.
Chris, we have written up.
Let me pull up my notes here. I was kind of working on it just before. And let's see. Okay. I got it under crew guy questions.
There we go. Perfect.
All right.
Let's see. Don't you love it when the band comes on stage early?
Never. It's the worst thing in the world.
No.
What?
Definitely, little timesheet for a reason. Unless, you know, everyone's cool with, like, coming in on early, but...
There's been quite a few texts I've sent to the stream saying, get the band off stage. Because you're like, it's always, not to say any names, but Adam Taylor.
Wanderer, man. He's a wanderer.
He's a wanderer. You're trying to line check. And like maybe check the bass or check the tracks. And suddenly Adam's up there asking where the hell his bass is. It's like, it's not time yet. It's not ready. It's awful. I love you, Adam.
We actually, you know, when we started like with our first crew guys, like Carlos was one of our first crew guys.
Was he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. He was like, you were like TMing, right?
Yeah, that was actually my first TM gig.
Nice.
One of the few ones I've done.
We have, dude. We can go into this in a little bit, but yeah. So you were the first front of house, but you were one of the first front of house and like one of our first tour managers. Yeah. So that we have this whole, we call it the university. I'll just say it. I'll just go into it now. We have this whole thing like we call it the Ballyhoo School for touring and live sound engineer. It was like this long thing that we made, like super long acronym. Basically, we would get crew guys and train them up by our standards. And like, we would make people like work hard. Like we wouldn't treat people like shit, but we make sure they're doing it the right way. And like, and give our expectations, like how we expect things to be run. And we go on tour with other bands. And other bands would be like, would see how great that our crew guys were. And then they'd take them from us. So
stolen.
Yeah. So, you're one of the stolen ones. But yeah, so like all our crew guys over the past have all gone on to like bigger bands and just bigger and better things, you know? So we always thought that was funny.
It doesn't surprise me seeing how you run your ship because you are a guy who really does know what he's talking about. And you really, especially if you're a musician, knowing that, you want to instill that in your crew because you don't want your crew guy asking you questions about how to use your amplifiers or how to wrap cables. You know, it's really important to have those guys be a tier above you in that kind of, in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, we've had people that we've started them, you know, from nothing, like where they barely know how to string a guitar. You know, we've done that before. And, you know, obviously you got to put in the work. And it was one of those things like we saw as an opportunity to, you know, either take someone for free or really cheap because we weren't making a lot of money back then, or, you know, we can help this person out by like, you know, we could really train them up and mold them into what we need. And, you know, eventually what I came to realize later was like, yeah, we're helping like build careers, you know, like help people put people on the path, you know? So,
yeah, man, I think it's a win-win situation. Absolutely. Because you take someone that, you know, you see a lot of potential with and you mutually, you know,
grow together and learn from each other. But it's good to have role models like that early on to like really show you the ropes and like show you basically how to tour, man.
And I just went on stage for one night with Hold Steady in Minneapolis and then went on a 3-month tour. I think that's way more beneficial, you know, than having to sit in a classroom with all the perfect gear. It's all set up properly. There's no troubleshooting. You just sit there and like anyone can fucking EQ a mix, you know, maybe not perfectly, but the hard part is all that problem solving. So that crash course is, I think, the best and most important thing for any incoming tech or crew member, you know?
Yeah, I equate it to like bartending school. Like I never went to bartending school, but I always heard like, don't go to bartending school because it ruins you, you know? Like, as opposed to just getting up there behind the bar and making some fucking drinks, you know?
Just go be an alcoholic.
Go be an alcoholic.
Start young. Start young, kids.
Start young.
Yeah.
Well, no, just like learning how to interact with people because you're surrounded by personalities that are just, mm-hmm. and you're turning them over, you know, every couple hours. Some people stay there for like 6 hours, but you know, all day long, you got people coming in and out. And you're learning to make all these different drinks and, you're dealing with people. And I don't know, there's something to that as opposed to like sitting in a classroom. So it's the same thing with learning how to, work a mixing board or, you know, how to hook up an amp or anything like that. I imagine just jumping
and
into
even,
it.
Even guitars too. Like you see more and more the more you're out there, you know, cause you're not going to see, you know, 17 or 18 different guitars in a, you know, in a few days in a school. But if you're on the road, you might do that if you're helping the opening acts or anything.
Yeah,
like that,
there's nothing like real life experience and actually getting out there and using it, man, getting to these venues. And I think you learn the most on the road and by making mistakes, man. Like you make mistakes on the road and you like make sure that never happens again. And you always remember that time that, you know, you didn't put that set list out or the guitar was on tune.
Why are you talking about me here?
What, dude? Hey, man. Santa Barbara Bowl. What? Hey, man.
He hit that guitar on a case, okay?
Yeah. No, you're right. You know, there's nothing like actually doing it. And, you know, you guys know, when you go into a venue, you know, and you go to 30 venues in a month, and everyone is different. Every room is different. Carlos, everyone mm-hmm. sounds different, you know, when you're in front of house, like, you know, and the, like those shit clubs that have like the awful power, like you can't plug anything in anywhere and things are,
dude,
and you get these hums and it's just,
yeah,
you know, you learn, you know, you have to figure out, okay, how do I get through this? You know? And by, you know, if you go on tour for a year with a band or even 6 months, you're going to be probably a lot better off than you were sitting in a classroom.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I would almost love to go to one of those schools and just see what they're teaching. Because what do they teach for problem solving? It's like, oh, hey, this channel doesn't work. Oh, your cable's bad. Go fix it. Like, I don't even know what they really do in those situations. It can't be nearly as beneficial as being on stage with bad power, an angry lead singer, or whatever it might be, you know?
Yeah, I can't... You know, I don't want to totally discount them, but, you know, because I'm sure that there's some knowledge there. But, man, yeah, just hands-on and just doing it and just different gear every day and different, you know.
Trial by fire.
Trial by fire. Absolutely. Get your, yeah. our crew guys were on fire a lot in the beginning, you know.
So I got a cool question for you, Howie. Sure. What are the attributes that make a really great crew member for you and for Ballyhoo?
First, I'd say probably a good personality really, really makes a big difference for me. I think if you got to get along with people, you know, when you're out with a lot of people for months at a time.
People forget that too, that you spend so much time together off stage,
yeah,
you know, on the road.
Yeah. And, you know, for us, like we're not traveling in the big tour bus yet. I say yet, but
that's right.
Gotta shoot for the stars, kids.
Yeah, baby.
So we're not doing that yet. So like we're in a Sprinter that we converted into basically a little mini bus. And so it's typically seven of us in there, four band, three crew. And we're in there just, you know, it's very close quarters and we all just become homies, you know? And, So yeah, you want to be, you don't want somebody that's going to be crappy. I mean, everybody has their day, I guess, but, somebody with a good personality just to start with is great. But for, you know, when it comes to the work situation, attention to detail is probably the biggest thing.
Absolutely.
Being able to see and understand what's happening and like be able to troubleshoot and not freak out. And, you know, even the best of us will have those freak out moments, you know, where the whole time it was just a patch cable, you know, when you're going through everything else, you know, we just tend to forget things, you know, we forget if you've got, I don't know, if you have like three cables between you and the board, you know, it's like, okay, just start there. Start. Okay. How's that cable? Try that one. Okay. Try the middle one. Try the next one. You know, like, you have to be able to remain calm and, not lose your mind and just because if you panic, you're going to ruin things more.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't panic. You got to remain calm and chill, even though you got the promoter going, get the fuck on stage. You know, what's, you know, cause like we've had situations where we can't go on stage yet because there's a problem, you know? And I'm sure you guys have two festivals are like this, you know? And for the longest time, I thought it was just us. I thought it was just, you know, we were the only band that ever had problems at a festival.
It's every band.
Yeah. It seemed like every band that we toured with or did a festival with got along just fine at the festival. But I've seen more recently that it's not just us anymore. Even the biggest bands, you know, have issues.
Oh, so. Man, it'll happen at even the biggest shows, dude.
Yeah. The biggest shows.
That's about one thing I really respect about Carlos, though. And I'm sure you've seen this because he was touring with you. But Carlos has one of the most level heads during like problems, like situations on stage. You always stay so fucking calm, which is one of my biggest struggles is staying calm during those situations because I just fucking go. But you just have that like super calm disposition. Look through every cable, check the console.
Yeah, I mean, I just honestly, when it's go time, I'm like three steps ahead. So I'm just thinking like going down basically the signal flow of it. It's usually the easiest thing.
So you have to do. One of the people I respect most, obviously you're one of them, Los, but and you too, Howie. But I have a friend who's in corporate events. He's the video engineer at a company called VHC. And whenever there's a big problem on these like massive, you know, 4,000 person, you know, like Apple press conference style shows, he'll just stop and he'll sit for a minute and a half and two minutes and just think through everything. And then he gets up and just fixes it right away every time. But he just has that moment where he just stops, thinks through the entire signal flow, decides where the problem probably is, and then just goes off and fixes it. And that's a really, really great technique, I feel like, just to have that kind of calm disposition where you just think about the process, the signal flow, the most likely failure point, and just go fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's, you know, that's with anything. But, you know, if you can remain calm in a heightened situation.
Yeah. When your wife yells at you, you just sit there for 2 minutes silent.
What I do wrong.
Think about the problem.
What did I do wrong? What, yeah. What can I do to make her feel better?
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Dude, honestly, I think it comes down to like really knowing your gear, man. Cause, and being hands-on. Because the fact that I plug in all those XLRs every day and I know those sub snakes and I know the racks inside and out, it helps remain calm and being confident.
If you're trying to be a crew guy, I think, you know, if you're a Mondra guy, go home, install the offline editor and just search through every menu. For a guitar tech, asked to take the amps home. I took a Kemper home for 2 months before we used them on the road. And I just sat there and went through every single menu and played it every day for a month. You know, if you have that option, always take gear home and just sit with it and use it in your own personal situation. It'll always help you.
I don't think anybody's, you know, I wouldn't have thought of that, you know, as a crew guy, like, hey man, can I take your amp home for a little bit and like learn it? You know, like, I think that's great. Yeah.
I took their guitars home too. I took Micah's Les Paul home. I took the TMG home. You know, just the more time you have with your hands on that gear in a different situation than just like playing it for 10 seconds on stage to check it, the better you're going to be at your job and the more you'll understand, like, especially a guitar, you'll understand how that guitar feels more, how he wants to play it or how she wants to play it, you know?
Yeah. Alex is, our tour manager, is really good at, setting up the stage for us now. He's a guy that has a lot of attention to detail. you know, I don't really have to tell them anything anymore. Everything's pretty much there. I mean, I'm always like looking around and like, oh, you know, this, we need to move this front line back a little bit, things like that. I look at it as like an artist, you know, like, like, how's this going to look, you know, when you look out, but, no, he's really great at just paying attention and knowing what each of us, likes and doesn't like. And
that's the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it takes a while. You got to be with somebody for a long time.
Yeah. Your first year is going to suck if you're a tech or a monitor guy, like, cause you're going to need to learn everyone, learn the band, make friends and just have that, like, you know, what they want instilled in your head. And it takes a little bit.
Yeah. It's a level of comfort. You know, you're dealing with different personalities.
Yeah. And like Los and I said in the last episode, if you're a crew member, label, 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 fucking write down everything. Cause you're going to forget.
Yes. Yes. I'm a I'm such a nerd when it comes to our gear, and I color code and label everything.
I'm with you on that. I labeled my kitchen in my last apartment, like where every dish went, like plates, bowls.
Chris is going crazy in quarantine, everybody.
Yeah. I'll take like the colored spike tape, and just everything has a color. Like I have my own color. Donald has a color. Like everybody's colors match throughout all the gear, you know? You have to idiot-proof everything. And it's not that people are idiots. It's that you just don't want any confusion. Like if there are ports or inputs or anything that are outputs that I don't use, I just cover them up with tape. I make it so like they go, if you got a cable, it's going to have a color on it and it's going to match the only hole that, you know, has the same color. And that's where that goes, you know?
And I think that's especially important translating to a much larger scale tour. Cause when you're on like Los has done arena tours, you know, if you have a bunch of stagehands that you're directing, it's way easier to say, go do this. It's all color coded instead of having to walk them through every step of the process and explain to them what port to plug into, what cable to use. It just makes your life easier and way more efficient.
Oh, dude, when you have like massive power distros and, you know, all these different power cables and everything, just you're dealing with people all day, like the easier you make their day, they're going to love you for it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're going to work harder because they're going to be having a way better.
And your day will go faster too. Your setup will be faster, cleaner, easier, everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that all really comes down to being lucky enough to have pre-production before any tour and just going out, fucking labeling everything, dude.
You can never label too much.
You know, thinking about, especially colors, man. And like using any sort of bright color tapes on, you know, cables and keeping things clean. You know, you're going to be on a dark stage. If you need to find the cable or an in or an out, you want to be able to have a good little guide.
<Better know. laughs> Absolutely, man. Absolutely. There's no sense in, you know, making it harder. It's and Alex and my guys, they have it down, you know, every day. It's the same thing. And like now, like we don't have to, like I used to want to go out there and kind of set things up and just, you know, just to make sure it was right. And now it's like, I know that they can handle it. So I'll stay in the van until, you know, they'll have to call me. They'll be like, yo, get in here. You know, cause I'm like playing video games or something.
That's awesome, man. That's exactly where you want to be. Like, that's great. Shout out to, you know, Alex and the crew too. I mean, it was a pleasure touring with you guys.
Oh, great.
I definitely noticed that you staying in the van on tour, because a few days I was going to give you Kemper profiles. I was like, where the fuck is this guy? He's going on stage in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. There's really only one place that I'm at, you know. Yeah. I just got to stay in there and either I'm working on the laptop or I'm playing video games. So I'll bring my PS4 out sometimes. I got another question for you guys.
Let's hear ready? It.
Okay. What's your favorite part about the band guys all noodling around their instruments while you're trying to EQ and compress? What's your favorite part about that?
I actually like that.
You love that? Do you really?
Yeah, I love that. I feel like that moment is so good on tour when everyone just gets up and starts fucking around, and it just shows that everyone's comfortable. Like everything that, you know, it's just dialed in and they're not really worrying about their songs are just jamming out and goofing off and noodling about.
We talked about it last episode. Like, that's when we know that we're doing a good job. When I think you heard a few of these jams in the last tour when the band got on stage and maybe played half a real song and then started doing weird Eastern, like, just random jams, or played Slayer. And that's fun for me because I can, like, put on random Kemper profiles, like some really hardcore triple rec sounds or whatever. It's just, you know, it's just a good feeling to know that everyone is comfortable. They're not worried about anything on stage and they can just fuck around and have some fun.
Okay.
Yeah. And to me, it's almost like, as a monitor guy, it's better because, you know, they're kind of like really getting into it versus like when they're playing their songs at soundcheck, they're kind of going 75%, 80%, 85%, you know, vocally. And that's understandable. Like, you know, it's half day. Like, you're not, you know, it's not the show. You're not going to go 100. And so, like, it's fun. It's fun. You get pretty close to dialing in, you know, what you're going to see during the show. So
that question backfired on me then. I was looking for, like, oh, fuck that. Because I hate it. Like, when we're trying to get kick drum and, like, somebody's, like Nick's over there, like, you're like, dude, he's trying to get the kick drum. You know, like, you know what I mean?
I mean, honestly, like, especially at front of house, like, you're never going to hear, unless you're trying to really dial something in. But hearing every single instrument by itself is like pointless, because almost at no point you're going to be doing that. Maybe a kick drum or a bass vocal, but you're going to be, you want to hear everything together. So you start making, you have more time to make everything cohesive.
And I think that there's two sides to this. If we were having a bad day and trying to fix something and someone was fucking around, that'd be different. But I think the majority of the time for us, because we have enough time as headliners usually, it's just a good feeling because everyone's ready, everyone's comfortable. We're ready and comfortable as the crew. So it's just fun to see the boys, you know, having a good time up there fucking around.
All right, that's good. Good vibes. What do you guys do when, like, on an off day? Like, what is a crew? What is the life of a crew person, you know, when there's no work?
Oh, it's amazing. Number one, you sleep until about 4 o'clock in that beautiful pitch black, ice cold bus bunk. I mean, usually, like, I'll think of a few days at Los and I've had off. One of the great ones is Seattle. We've had two great days in Seattle where Los and I, the first one, we just got up, went and got some pierogies. Were they pierogies?
Pierogies at the market.
Yeah, went to the market, got pierogies, sat by the fucking bay and just like ate those pierogies. And that was an epic day. But nothing dramatic. And then we had another one with the boys at Catastro where we just had a fucking day. Hit a few bars, hit the Space Needle, hit Emerald City Guitars. Shout out Emerald City. We saw about, I don't know, 8 or 9 58 Les Paul bursts.
Oof.
Which was pretty fantastic.
Some 60 Strats. And
I will say most times we have days off, Los and I go to guitar stores, fall in love with guitars and get our hearts broken.
Oh.
Like Chicago.
Yeah, just like get a good cup of coffee, and definitely you want to, like, I like to treat myself to a nice meal on a day off.
Yeah, we definitely do good meals.
And dude, find a record shop. That's my thing. I think everyone's a little different, you know, but I like finding myself a record shop.
He even told me this last tour, he's like, I've been so good. I haven't gone to like any record stores or spent money on vinyls. The next day he comes back to the bus with a bag of like 15, 20 vinyls. I'm like, what the fuck?
Dude, they find me, man. I don't know what to say.
Find you.
And I mean, for me, like as a guitar tech, the guitar shops are huge. You know, that's a big thing. So I have my favorite guitar shops in most cities. And usually Los will come with me. And sometimes it's great. I remember the last time we went to a really great guitar shop with Chicago Music Exchange. And
God.
I know Los
and you're gonna tell the story.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell the story. I know Los and I both still lose sleep over this day. We found this, I think it was an LG 00 Gibson, right? From like 1950.
LG 2
from like 55.
Yeah.
And I think we spent a good hour in there playing it, just passing it back and forth. Just couldn't put it down. It was just like a magical guitar. And
one of the best acoustics I've ever played.
And we were talking about maybe splitting it, or just Los would buy it, or like we just kept talking about how we would get this guitar. And we ended up just leaving it there and walking away, going back to the bus. And I think we called up the next day or like 2 days later or something to see if it was still there, because we just couldn't live with ourselves for leaving it. And it was already fucking sold.
Damn.
And then, Los, you went back a year later, didn't you, and asked him about it?
Yeah, I went back a year later and I was, you know, asking around. I'm like, hey, do you have any Gibson LGs by chance? It's like, no, not right now. And then, you know, I told that guy the story and he's like, oh man, yeah, I remember that guitar. That was a really good one. We sold that one pretty fast. And I was
like
crushed that the fact that the guy who worked at the store still remembered how awesome of a guitar that was.
A perfectly like worn vintage parlor.
It was just one of those guitars that had, you know, energy, if you believe in that. And it was awesome, man. We should have picked
it
up. But,
what was the price tag on that?
I think it was $3,000. A little under three. I think it was like 27 or 25, something like that.
Yeah. A good acoustic guitar is great, man. I mean, I have one. Hold on, let me grab it. It's right here. So I got this guitar. I got this back in 2000, right here. It's got a little Bob Marley gravity skateboards, a little value logo, but it's actually not bad shape after not sitting in a case for 20 years, but just sitting around.
Oh, it's that old, really?
Yeah. So if you guys remember, there was a genre of music called new metal. And in like 99, 2000. And the big thing was seven string guitars. And at the time, I think we had just recorded our first album. And we hadn't released it yet, I think. And it was like our first album's like a mix of just whatever. It's like funky and some punk rock and some reggae and some weird rock stuff. And we kind of didn't know what we were gonna be. And I was like, I'm gonna go buy a seven string guitar. I was at Guitar Center and I bought one. And I came home with it and I was like trying to play it. I'm like, I'm never going to play this. I'm never going to play this. Like, I don't know what to do with this. You know, like it wasn't fitting with the stuff that, you know, that we had had, like I'd already written. And I'm like, I can't write on this. Like what is this? This extra string. And,
extra string.
Yeah. I was like, what? It's ridiculous. And I'm not
bogus.
I'm not West Borland, you know, like, and so I took it back and I got that acoustic guitar. I traded it up. And that was the best decision I ever made. Yeah. One of the best decisions I ever made with gear was buying that acoustic because I didn't have an acoustic yet. I had a couple of electrics, you know. And once I realized that I could just sit around the house or take it with me somewhere and actually play it, you know, like at the beach or
way more.
Whatever, yeah. Like got way more out of that than I ever would a seven string. And it would have just sat there, you know. And I wrote some songs on this guitar that, you know, ended up on albums later on. And like, I don't know, it's just an acoustic guitar is a wonderful thing. Now I've got like seven of them around the house, but like,
yeah,
it's wonderful, man. The acoustic guitar.
There's nothing like a great acoustic. It's something so, so, so special.
Yeah.
If everyone out there trying to learn guitar, I would recommend, my dad made me do this. He said, you can't play electric until you play acoustic for a year. To see if I was actually serious about it. So he gave me his old Ovation, which I hate Ovations, but you know, and it had like the stainless steel neck. So it was a one piece neck. So you couldn't do a fret job on it. So it was like, my dad had like puttied some of the frets cause they had worn down and shit, but I had to play.
Is that where your tech frustrations started?
I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, it's so important to build that finger strength, you know? So start on acoustic, get a great acoustic and learn. Here's a question for everyone. First guitar, first electric guitar. Howie?
My first guitar, I still have it. I got it when I was 14. I just turned 14. And it was an Araya Pro 2. I don't know what that is.
Neither do I.
That's
it
amazing.
It was just this black guitar. I got it because...
Was it Strat style or like Gibson style?
No, it's like probably the body's kind of like, it reminds me of like maybe ESP or something, or Jackson or something. But and then like the
humbuckers,
headstock's like this kind of pointy triangle thing. I think it has a little shape cut in the end too. But I haven't seen it in years. It's been, you know, God, I got this guitar almost 30 years ago. Is that legit? Jesus Christ. I bought it because it looked like the guitar from The Crow, the movie The Crow.
Yeah.
When he's like on the rooftop playing. And it reminded me of that. It was black, has like this maple neck, but you know, and it was just it served its purpose, you know. And then I kind of learned on it, and then my mom helped me buy this Fender, Squire Bullet. For like $120.
Oh, the Squire Bullet.
Yeah. A little white, you know, and I put stickers all over it because I thought I was Billy Joe Armstrong. And yeah, that was it.
What about you, Los?
Obviously, I wanted a Fender Stratocaster. I feel like all my favorite players, that's what they play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I ended up with a Squire like starter pack, like Strat starter pack with a like 15-watt amp. Dude, I started covering with stickers, and Green Day was a huge influence, and Blink, and you know, Rancid, all the punk bands. So I feel like that's what everyone did.
I did the same thing. I got my first electric was a Behringer starter pack.
Wow.
With a Strat style, you know, black guitar and the 15-watt amp, you know. And the first riff I played, I picked it up and played Chicago 25 or 624 for like 2 days straight. That was the first riff played on that guitar.
Oh man, I don't remember the first riff I played, but it was one of the first was definitely About a Girl by Nirvana.
Nice.
From the Unplugged show, and I didn't know how to play chords, so I would just do this. I would just go. I knew it was an E to a G, and I would just go. And I did that for like hours. And I know my mom was just like, fucking shoot me, you know?
Yeah.
It's really weird thinking we've gone, you know, just about 5 months without any shows.
It's crazy. I told Carlos, I spent 2 nights ago, I was sitting on the couch, like watching old Iration live shows. I'm like, oh man, I used to be on that stage. I like watched the Red Rock show, like, ah, fuck, that was really fun. I had a purpose back then.
Yeah, we had a purpose.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah, I miss it, man. It's hard to sometimes like know that you're supposed to be on tour. Like right now we're supposed to be somewhere on that summer tour. I don't even know where, but there's days that for some reason that like comes up and I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
And it's not even just tour. It's like, I just want to travel again. Like, cause I based my entire life around travel.
Yeah.
And suddenly you can't go anywhere, and they're going to shut down the economy again, probably in Minnesota. And it's just like, fuck.
I know. I get my tattoos in Florida, so I can't go to Florida.
Oh, shoot. It's nice. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Here's a good question. Probably a more serious question. So what a lot of people don't think about is, you know, they see that all these jobs are getting shut down and everything. And they see that artists aren't playing. They see that, you know, so we're doing live streams and things like that. They don't think about the crew people, everybody behind the scenes, you know, everybody suddenly just got put out of work, you know, in March. So what do you guys do to make money when you can't be out on the road doing the job that that your whole life is around? What do you guys do? Start podcasts, right?
It's tough, man. Fuck. I mean, personally, I started doing podcasts, so... Go check out Peterson McCone Production. All the podcasts we're doing. But also, like, that doesn't, you know, it takes a while to have a business go into profit. So I fucking applied to a grocery store. You know, like, it's money's not easy to come by right now. And our resumes really don't make sense. And I think a lot of people don't get that. Because even though I have a really extensive resume and I've been touring and, you know, with pretty large bands for years, the average person doesn't look at that resume and go, oh, wow, he's a great problem solver. They go, what the fuck? Blues Traveler, Iration, what the fuck is this? You know? So, and a lot of people also have been asking on resumes, is this for COVID only? And it's like, well, no shit. I'm not trying to climb the Starbucks hierarchy, be a Starbucks store manager. I think it's tough for all of us. It's tough for all of us because, like, we spent, you know, years and years specializing in what we do. Like, we all worked really hard to get to the places we're at. And suddenly all of that is just it's just moot. It's like a moot point. Like, it doesn't matter anymore, you know, because we specialize, sadly, in large scale events, in mass gatherings of people. And those are now illegal. So it's really tough to try to find a new niche in this kind of world, you know?
Yeah. So me and Chris started this podcast. That's one of the reasons, because now we have much more time in our hands and something that we can do to get our voice out there and let people know what's going on.
Yeah. I think if you guys are definitely on the right track here, because some people don't know what to do. Some people, look, man, it's like a lot of people that I've met, and I know like a lot of bands and stuff, like we're all like part-time comedians, and you know, we have other things that we do. You know, some people are like, I just music, blah, I just bleed music. It's like, okay, you don't do anything else? Like, do you draw? Do you, you know, are you funny? Or do you have a way you think about politics? Do you think, are you a problem solver? Are you, can you go and talk on video for 20 minutes and give like great advice about money? You know, like, there's other things. I think we're multi-talented, you know, and some people just don't think that they can use that talent to actually make any money or, you know, do anything with it. So when I do on my podcast is like, I try to, it's about, you know, my time in the music industry and stuff, but there's, you know, fundamentals to like just about being driven and using your talents and finding ways to monetize, because I believe that, you know, even before COVID, that, you know, people need to be setting themselves up with multiple revenue streams. That's just the kind of the world we live in. If you're not doing like a job, like you're not working, you know, for the government or working at Best Buy or Starbucks or whatever, I mean, you probably should be setting up something on the side anyway. But, you know, when you're somebody like us, when you're an artist, it's like, you probably should be, what can you do as a creative person? Like, I like making videos, you know, I like talking about all this stuff. So it was like, for me, it was like, okay, YouTube and podcast, you know, like that's a logical thing for me. I was telling my buddy, you guys know Dan, DB, Pacifiers.
Yeah.
He draws like Star Wars shit all the time. Like, he'll do drum heads, you know? And I was talking to him and I was like, bro, why aren't you doing like mounting a camera up here, getting a light and drawing live on a drum head and taking questions and talking to a people on Facebook and say, hey, what should I put in here? You know, whatever. And at the end of it, sell it for $100. Why aren't you doing that? You know?
Yeah. There's so many options out there if you really do think creatively about this stuff.
Yes. Some people are definitely lazy and just kind of like whatever, blah, but others, the driven people, I think they'll find a way, right? They'll find a way to make money and survive and adapt.
Though I got to say, I wish I was lazy sometimes.
Adapt. Just like, I wish I could hit it with that word right there, man. Adapt. Yeah.
I mean, how?
And that's the big thing here. And for my whole family, because my whole family is freelance. My mom does corporate events. My dad's a piano technician. And they've had to learn how to adapt. So my mom's, you know, doing teleprompter work and stuff like that. Like, you just have to, as a freelancer, you have to expect these situations to come up from time to time and have to, you know, find a way to navigate those, you know, those new waters.
Yeah. You can't rest just when you're like, oh, I got a good situation. No, be looking for the next situation. Set yourself up. When this all went down, I was already doing my podcast and the live stream stuff. I already had all this gear that you guys see. Every time I get on with somebody, like, oh, look at that stuff. And I'm like, I already had this, you know, like, it's just that when it went down, I was prepared. I was just like, I just did what I do, you know, I just maybe doubled down on it, especially in the beginning. I was doing a lot of live streaming and stuff. But, you know, you should always be looking ahead and setting yourself up. So like for, you know, instead of like asking for bullshit, you know, when people are like, hey, what do you want for your birthday? Like, you know, grandparents and shit like that, and or whoever, Christmas, you know, my fiance's mom. Like, I'm like, hey, you know, actually, I've been trying to get these speakers for a while. You think you maybe give me $100 for the speaker, you know, towards the speakers, or, you know, just build. And when my dad was still here, like, he'd be like, yo, what do you think of this? And I'd be like, oh, check this out. I want this. And he like helped me get things, you know, like, because I knew I had an idea what I wanted to do. So now it's like I'm set up for whatever, you know. And I just think that I wish that more people. My friend Mike Pinto, he finally got his setup. He got a SM7B, and now he's doing live streaming. And it took him a while to get the hang of it, you know. And now he's like stoked.
Yeah, man. Shout out, Mike.
Yeah, love Mike, man.
Sounding great,
love
man.
That. So you know, I was definitely seeing artists kind of freak out and like, what do I do? You know, at the very bare minimum, use this, set up your phone, just go. But
yeah,
just be prepared, like. Be working on something else. What else do you have in your mind? You're a creative person, you know? It's not just music.
You can't focus on one revenue stream. That's the biggest thing, because it's going to dry out at some point.
Yeah. You have to... Today, anyway, you know, especially for artists, like, it's not just about the music anymore. It's just... It's a whole shift that's been happening, and it just... Day by day, it's even more... you know, the industry is like flat now, in the sense of like there's major platforms, but anyone can be on it. It's not like you gotta work hard and get lucky and be on MTV. That doesn't exist anymore, you know. Radio, it's podcast play. I mean, it's Spotify playlist now. That's the new way to break out. You know, it's not so much radio anymore. If you want to be on the radio, then go join Imagine Dragons, you know. But when it comes to everybody else, independent artists, you got to keep putting out good stuff, make a ton of content. Our content is songs, music, keep putting it out, and then make videos. Now, you know, you can make music videos, but just make a video. I put out one today of me working on that Sublime song that just came out today, like last year. I did a live, and I chopped it up and put it up. Like, you make content, use your technology, you know. Get your
absolutely.
Man, especially if you're in a band, like you have different people. I'm sure somebody, you know, draws, or somebody's good at video editing, and with that you have a whole team.
Absolutely.
Or you have a homie that does that, and you know, that's how you start growing your crew and your core team, dude.
Or you be the homie, you know, you be the guy, you be the guy that goes and takes this time that we're off and goes on like Skillshare or something and learns, or YouTube University, and go on and just watch.
Yeah.
I learned how to mix by watching YouTube videos and obviously doing it. You know, you got to do it. But that's where I learned a lot of stuff, you know, watching videos about compression and EQ. It's like, that was really hard. And still my mind isn't completely wrapped around it, you know, but it's like, I got to a point where we can just make our own records. Like, there's bands just sitting here, and we're recording, you know. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, Donald records drums at his house. Everybody records at their house, and they send it to me, and I mix it, and we put it out.
It's amazing.
It's efficiency.
Yeah, there's no reason not to, man, especially with all this downtime. If you're a creative, I think you should use this as, like, just fuel to sit down and create, pump
without a doubt.
Now's the time. Absolutely. I definitely think about you guys and all the other crew people that we know. It's like, it's got to be tough when, you know, you're not the band, so you're not living off of, like, you know, passive income from streams and you know what I mean, from a catalog that's been out there for 10 or 20 years, you know.
Right.
You guys are, like, as you said, Chris, you worked your whole life to be the best tech you could, the best engineer, and all of a sudden it just goes away, you know? So now it's just time to figure out, okay, where can I apply this? Where can I apply this on, you know, take it here?
Right.
Are there other bands that need me to mix their record for them? Like, stuff like that. I'm getting work doing that, you know? So.
Yeah, that's kind of where, like, I've been trying to, like, head to, you know, just if anybody needs mix downs of, like, live shows or... You know, even records, like, I, you know, I've been letting people know that I'm down for that and set up for that. And yeah, dude, like, you know, painting and just doing other things, I think, is key. And just to know, like, at least for, like, crew guys out there, man, like, this will pass, dude. It's all temporary. And, you know, like, this will be back. It's already back in, you know, other countries and starting to come back across Europe. So,
And it's an opportunity for all these people to diversify and think about other options that they can use even when they're touring, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like downtime that if you tour, like you're most likely not going to get again, at least, you know, not by choice. Like,
yeah, for
so
sure.
So just use it, man. Like it's rare that, you know, we were home for this long, you know, so be with your family, sit down and like make that music you've been meaning to make, or
make a podcast,
you know, do a podcast,
make a podcast learn with your friend,
learn know? How yeah, to cook, learn how to cook, and then start a video podcast about that, about how you're learning how to cook, you know, just it's dude. It's all about like when you realize that everything is content, you know, you realize that even the dumbest things, and I've said this before, the things that you think are like the dumbest things ever, making a cup of coffee or like
me, you know, get that OnlyFans going, you know?
Dude, I should do an OnlyFans for my egg what? Instagrams.
Your egg Instagrams.
What?
What, dude? Yeah, man, people like those, Chris.
I know, I like them too, but
there is
egg is the wrong word.
There's a market for everything. That's what people need to get. Like, so do your egg thing.
It's just such a that weird
fucking yolk porn, bro. It's a real thing.
Oh my god.
You say yolk porn.
Yeah, he said what? Yolk. He did say yolk porn. Alright, we're coming up on an hour here, so I thought maybe we'd do the Kemper pod test with Howie to see how good his ears are.
Man. Over okay.
Zoom. You ready for this?
All right.
All right, Howie. So I have
is your quarter hand. Inch all right over there, bud?
Yeah, what's going on? Just plugging it in, doggy. It's fine.
All right, man. Doggy.
I have this 96 me on the spot.
Okay.
Cherry red Les Paul special.
Nice.
Oh, with Mojo Tone pickups.
Don't break
it's
it.
Not Mojo. It's not Mojo Tone. It's the Arcane pickups.
Ooh.
So great sounding guitar. Here's our first tone. These are both triple recs.
Okay.
So you got to decide what's Kemper and what's Line 6.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. Number one. Swap over here real quick. Here we got number two.
Man, okay. Can I hear the first one more time?
Yeah, hold on.
I think I got it, but okay. Okay, okay, okay. Number one is the pod.
Ha ha! Got him.
Yes, you got me.
Oh, yeah, fuck. You're totally no. You know you're right. You're
oh,
right.
I did it.
You
okay.
Got it right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I did it.
You got it right. It is a big difference, though, right? Like, the pod is just, number one, that noise floor.
Major difference. Yeah. I noticed that right away.
That's kind of a dead giveaway, honestly. And then the lack of touch sensitivity. I'll put my guitar on. This is on four.
On the higher end, too, it's just not as, like, airy and open. It just sounds very, maybe compressed or just muddy.
Yeah. You're going to the Kemper now?
Let's do the fun one, because everyone loves insane mode. You gotta love insane mode.
Yeah, there's something about it just sounds fake. It does.
And the Kemper just doesn't. Like Los and I were doing this comparison on the last episode, and I was talking about in my headphones through a proper preamp and not over Zoom, I can like hear what mic they use to do the cabinet, you know.
Wow, yeah.
The one we're playing right now is like it's clearly a 57 on a big 412, you know. And with the Line 6, you just don't get any of that subtlety.
Yeah, I noticed that years ago playing a pod. I was like, yeah, it sounds all right. It sounds cool, you know. And I was never like a big gear head. Like I can't tell you the differences really between guitars and things. I'm really bad at that. I never really paid attention to that. But there's definitely something about the pod, you know. And then when I listen to a Kemper, it's just like, fuck. Like you just feel it, man. It just, there's something. I don't know, the characterization, it's just different.
Are you guys all on Kempers now, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I'm never going back.
What made you guys do like the big switch? You know, was it everyone at the same time, or was it you and then, you know, everyone kind of jumped on board?
It was it was me first, but I got the recommendation from Nick, our bass player, because we had just done a Warped Tour in 2016, and everybody's using Kemper. It just makes sense, especially in a festival setting.
Oh, yeah.
And for flying and things. So everybody had Kempers, and I heard about it, and then went. So we were going on stage, and I think I told this story to you guys on the other pod. We were going on stage at Janice Live in St. Pete, and you know, y'all know that's like our favorite venue.
So good.
And we were going on stage, and everything worked. Everything worked at like 3 o'clock. And then at 10 o'clock, we were supposed to go on. It did not turn on. I had a triple rectifier, Mesa, and I had it for 10 years at that point. And it was used when I bought it, but 10 years it went. I just had it like maintenance, like new tubes. And I think I had like a lot of shit replaced inside. And it just didn't turn on. It like nothing happened. And for like 40 minutes, they're trying to troubleshoot. And
oh my God.
And so I call my Mesa guy, and I'm like, hey man, like this thing crapped out on me last night. Like I need to get one like right away. I'm on tour right now. He's like, oh, I can't really get you a deal on like a new head. I'm like, well, why not? You know, like why do I have
years?
A rep?
Yeah.
Yeah. But 10 years are repping this thing. He'd give me free tubes and stuff. He's a nice guy. But I was like, well, fuck. And then Nick's like, yo, Kemper. And it's the same price as what a triple rectifier would have been to replace. And with the new triple rectifier, the way they have that fucking connector for the
the foot switch
for the switcher, man. Style. It's one of those like proprietary like 9-pin bullshit, like
yeah,
like you know, and like whereas the one I had was a 1/4-inch, so I could run it into my own little FS5U, the little black box. I think it's FS5U, right? That you stomp and it's just a channel switcher, very simple. And I can use that, and so basically, like I would have to buy a whole new pedal with a cable if it ever went up, you know, if the switch went up. But anyway, so like I was like, well, fuck it. Yeah, let's do it. Why not? It sounds like way more convenient. And you know, it's obviously we know now it's like, it sounds amazing and all that, but like, so I got the toaster, this guy right here.
Yep.
I fell in love immediately. I still ran my pedals through it, like my pedal board. I had like a DD20 and a Holy Grail, and I would run that through here because I was just afraid that I wouldn't be able to get the same
sounds,
you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I also had my tap tempo, that little silver box that by Boss that I would just tap in,
yep.
Which was great. But then, and then I still ran it through my Mesa cab as well, my 412. And one night we couldn't use, like the stage was really small, so we couldn't, we were like, all right, just plug in the head to the front of house. And I was like, all right, whatever, man. Because I was like, I like having the sound behind me and like, in the
feeling
room.
Feeling it, yeah.
It does make a difference.
I'm on molds. I can't hear that thing anyway behind me, right? Because I like the ambience, right? And so I was like, shit. All right. So when we swung through home, I like left the cab at home. Like I was like, okay, that's it.
Wow. Yeah.
And then I dropped the pedal board. I'm like this. So that's it. Like, you know, and then I had the, you know, this guy, you know, that guy for it. And then last year so that was 2016. And then last year I got the stage. I was actually bought another one, the rack mount version to have to keep in the trailer because I hated taking it in and out, you know, when I wanted to work at home and play and stuff. So I wanted to have two of them. So I bought the rack from Sweetwater. The day before it's supposed to come, I'm like online and I see the stage is going on pre-order tomorrow. I was like, what is this? And I look and it's basically the the remote, but it's the amp inside. So it's the display and all that, you guys know, but I was like, well, shit. And it was only $1,700. And I just paid, I guess, $2,400 for the rack, you know? I was like, fuck that. So I placed the order. I bought the stage. The FedEx guy comes the next day from Sweetwater with the Sweetwater package. And I'd already talked to Sweetwater, printed out the return label and just slapped it on there. I put a big note. Hey, man, sorry. Can you take this back in the truck? he comes over like this.
Oh.
But yeah, I know. I felt bad. Puts it on the thing on the porch. And I'm watching on my camera from on my porch. I'm looking down. I see him go like grabs the note. He's like, scans it, picks it back up, walks it back to the truck.
Oh my God.
It took like 2 months to get the stage. I guess because it was on back order. Like it let me pre-order, but it was like, I guess I missed the first round. So it took me like 2 months to get it. But man, it is so great. I'm never going back, dude. I was never like a tube purist or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Most and I both are, but...
Yeah.
Even then, like for any kind of live situation, the Kempers are.
Yeah, as tech people, I'm a huge fan of the Kemper setup.
There's no reason for me to. I live in a townhome. I can't blast an amp, so I can go in here and be in headphones if I want, play any time of the night. It's a little box. It like what's not to love.
Yeah.
To me, it's like why do you really need to care that much? Like, do you need to stick to using the big cabs and the tubes? Like, I don't know.
And like you said, I mean, I still love to have, I have a DC-10 Mesa half stack, but I live in an apartment. I can't use it. It's at my parents' house now in the basement because I bought it back when I lived there, you know, 10 years ago. And now it's just pointless because I can't even play my DC-3. I'll never sell because I love my tube gear. And I have this DC-3 in front of me still, but I just can't turn it on in an apartment like this, you know.
Isn't it great though? As because usually I think a lot of the bands you guys work with are on Kemper, right?
Yeah.
So like, isn't it great being, you know, as a crew guy, not having to move big cabs unless you're expendable screw. Then you got to move like 24 cabs every night, right?
No, yeah. It's great. And we're talking about the last episode. What's great for me is that I have the racks in front of me, so I can completely control the boys sound from side stage. If the pedal's on that's not supposed to be, I can turn it off.
I love your setup.
If the tap tempo's wrong, I can tap for them. You know, all that stuff. I can ride the noise gate if it's a noisy room and MB goes to a really heavy distortion sound. You know, all that stuff is really, really great to have in tech world.
Now, have you done that really rad shit where you like run it to, like it runs to Pro Tools or to MIDI or whatever? Like,
no, because the boys don't want it. I suggested it and they said no.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that. That's witchcraft to me. Like, look, I love tech. I love it, man. I love it, all that shit. But that shit scares me because it's like, if there's a problem, then the show just goes down. Like, that's my big thing.
You're already in that world, though. Like, for me, I have one power cable. And if that cable gets unplugged, every Kemper turns off. All the wireless turns off. The tracks die. So, I mean, you're already in that kind of scary place where one fault can take down the entire show. And Kempers take a while to boot up. So if that cable gets pulled, the entire show stops for probably 30 seconds to a minute.
Yeah.
You know?
Which in showtime feels
it's
like
so scary.
At least 10 minutes of just...
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine.
Wow.
I think it's funny now that... Because I've had to do that a couple of times where it like crashes. Like, it's just funny to think like, oh, guys... I'm sorry, my amp crashed. I got to reboot it. I got to reboot my amp, my guitar amp.
I know it's weird to say as a tech too, because we had this problem a few times, actually at the live stream where the Kemper was just acting super weird. And in my head, I'm thinking analog problems, cables, stuff like that. But what fixed it was a reboot.
Yeah.
It's like a computer, you know?
That's right.
Did you unplug it and plug it back in? It's like silly.
Yeah.
It's like it's like, you know, a router when your Wi-Fi is
plugged. Exactly.
It's the weirdest thing, man. And like, well, did you update your amp? What? Yeah,
I know.
Update.
It's weird.
Got the latest,
weird,
latest firmware. Yeah,
latest firmware. Yeah.
Oh man. All right, boys. Well, yeah. I'm sure we could talk about this for another 4 to 5 hours.
We could.
And I'm sure we will at some point. But we have to end this at some point so our listeners aren't extremely bored.
Oh, they're having a great time. What are you talking about?
I know.
Yeah.
They're loving this.
I'm having a great time too. But so, Howie, it's been a fucking pleasure, man. Thanks for coming on. You are our first guest ever on the Stage Right podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Couldn't think of anyone better.
I did it. I'm making podcast history right now.
I know, right?
Like,
I'm sure we'll have a part two of this where we'll maybe test some more amps and guitars and see if Howie can tell the difference between single coils and humbuckers. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Since you say you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, please. Let's do it. I need the practice.
But until then, everyone, thanks for listening to the Stage Right podcast, and stay tuned next week for another amazing episode. Later, guys.
Later.
Later, guys. Thank you.